I'm Kathy Svitina, and this is the Efficiency Code, your guide to unlocking peak performance in finance and procurement. Listen as we decode the strategies of top industry leaders who are redefining efficiency and optimization. From spend management to lean operations, discover how to achieve more with less. Join us as we crack the code to sustainable growth. My guest today is Angela Estevez Mejias. Angela is a procurement expert with over 15 years of experience across multiple industries and regions, including Australia, Europe, and the US. Currently, she leads the procurement function eBury, a global fintech company where she has built the entire function from the ground up. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Angela's expertise spans strategic sourcing, supplier relationship management, and driving sustainable growth in a fast-paced environment. Throughout her career, Angela has developed a deep understanding of SaaS and cloud cost management, as well as cross-functional collaboration to streamline procurement processes. Her global experience and consulting background gave her the unique insights into building high-performing procurement teams. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you very much, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here as well. You know, you've had a fascinating journey in procurement, from consulting to leading procurement functions within companies. And I want to get into all of these things, but let's first start here. What does sustainable growth mean to you?
Well, that's a tough question, and particularly when you mention sustainable, which is a buzzword now, it's all about everywhere. But for me, sustainable procurement or sustainable growth is about working together with the strategic business departments, understanding their core goals, the strategy, short-term, medium, and long-term, and that they see you as a strategic partner to deliver results. So that's how I do see a sustainable growth, particularly when it comes to procurement.
That's really great. And you know, you have right now at eBury, you have been the procurement leader number one, and you're building the function from ground up. So I'm all ears. How has the experience been for you?
It's been by far better than I was expecting. I always mentioned that when I was taking part of the interview process, I'm coming with a very strong procurement and consulting background, I was always thinking that procurement was perceived as a pain in the ass. So that's actually what I stated as part of my interview, but I was okay with that. Prior to joining eBury, as you well pointed out, I had a long experience, so I was already believing in the value that procurement delivers. But I had to admit that a year and a half later, I don't think anyone is seeing procurement as a India, but the contrary. I mean, it has grown at eBury like a power of mouth, and everyone talking about how procurement is supporting different business units and team members. So they are repetitive customers to me, as I call them. I work with them. I had the opportunity to work with some of them for the first time. They saw the value that procurement could deliver and that we're there really to support and again, to deliver value. So you see them coming back. You see them reporting high up in the chain, as I said, about the outcomes achieved. And therefore, even coming from up there, you have to engage procurement. And the good thing also is that they have been very open and collaborative. I think, again, iBury for that is embracing changing constantly. So then seeing a new department and someone that is an expert in the matter, they actually embrace that change and that support. It's not a change, it's mostly a support. So that has been pretty good. It started only as a pilot project, I would say, for 6 months to actually address some of the key concerns raised by an internal audit. Within those 6 months, I delivered what it was required for that audit, which was basically understanding or at least delivering, developing a procurement policy and some standard processes. But there was so much take up of the procurement function itself that they were like, okay, I think you're here to stay, keep growing. And I have received very strong support from all the peers that I have worked so far. So really good. I mean, too good to be true sometimes.
And this is interesting. You mentioned that it looks like the internal audit mentioned that there needs to be a procurement function. Was the reason why you're starting to build a procurement function because of that internal audit, or it was also because something else? Because I'm always interested to hear, too, is when is that particular time when the switch goes off? It's, hey, we need procurement function. We actually need that specific thing in our business versus just, you know, muddling it through. So was it the internal audit that was that switch?
I would say yes. It doesn't come along, obviously. You had to understand also the growth of the company itself. They were just a startup a few years back. They grow massively. They focus on revenue, but now there is a strong focus in having the right foundations in the company. When I say the right foundation, is the skeleton, right? It's not massive selling and sales and also customers that are happy with our services, but it's how we internally work and perform, like cross-functional supporting functions such as procurement. Obviously, we're talking about HR, global finance and accounting. And there was not much knowledge about procurement. Everyone were doing their best, but definitely the main trigger, I would say, was that audit, where everyone was aware that Ibury was ready for the next phase of their growth and that they needed to bring those strong foundations, build those strong foundations. So when that internal audit recommendation came up, they were like, okay, this is what we need to do. And here I am.
And, you know, procurement generally in larger corporations can be a part of different departments, can be a part of the shared service. It can be a part of rolling under the CFO. It can also go into legal. It could be a part of the CEO office. Where are you currently sitting in terms of the org chart?
In that, I think we're more conservative and traditional within the finance. Reporting directly to CFO.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you've mentioned also that one of the biggest things that you have been able to do is actually have, you know, this track record of value, providing value to finance and to obviously all the other departments in the business. How were you able to do that? Let's dive a little bit deeper into that, because this is going to be interesting to our listeners, because as you've said, procurement is sometimes seen as a function that it's there, but there's so much value into it. How were you able to like keep the ground running and the start to deliver value? What were some of the things?
I think I wanted to have a holistic approach, despite of that could potentially be overwhelming, because when there is nothing in place, or sometimes there is something that you have to revert and restart and reshape, I follow up holistic approach. I was looking procurement holistically, again, I repeat, because I was looking into bringing change in sourcing negotiation, which is kind of the most popular phase of procurement. But I was highly involved working with different functions, cross functions, such as the one I mentioned earlier, legal, global accounting, TPRM. I introduce myself day one and say, I'm here to help you, I'm here to work with you. And in a way, I think I was also positioning procurement like the conductor, like the one linking all those different departments with that policy and process, right? So, and obviously downstream procurement, I work a lot with our finance team, also not only understanding the global accounting payment challenges, but also the business owners, like having to approve all the invoices. There were no threshold in terms of value. There were no purchase order process in place. So I followed that approach. Again, could be very overwhelming because it's a lot. But I think I was very lucky that I was given really like a blank book and they were like, this is your baby. It's your opportunity to do what you think is best. And luckily, in my consulting background, I touch on all those different areas. So my approach to procurement is that broad. So the value delivery was across all those different areas. Some of them are more popular, obviously, when you deliver savings.
Yep.
But things such as contract management support. I'm now involved in particularly all the SaaS cloud contracts management activities. I'm introduced to the vendor. I take part of quarterly reviews and I support and help in some areas where, you know, there has been long-standing relationship where maybe they are not at their best now. So just bringing more structure. Some vendors have been for years and they never really have like an annual contract review. So just bringing that structure and facilitating that communication, that's also seen as value. it's streamlining processes, automating some of the processes. It takes time, but again, they gave me the opportunity to show that there were value there and deliver. And again, I think I did have that opportunity to work or to do a little bit across all those different areas. So they all perceive the value and therefore and understanding that we need to keep growing procurement.
This is so good. And there are two things that I really want to dive deeper into because I think it's going to be so valuable to our audience. And one is you said that it was overwhelming. And I would like to hear, like, how did you manage to compartmentalize everything so that it wasn't too overwhelming for you? Like, what was the process that you went through as you were building this function from the ground up? And the other one, you mentioned streamlining and automation. So I would like to hear, like, what are some of the things that you were working on that were really making a big difference for you as you've seen that it delivered value in the business. But let's start first here, the overwhelming aspect of it, because as you were talking, I'm like, oh my goodness, there is so much work to be done here. How did you, like, what was your process when you got into the company, you saw there's so much that needs to be done here. Where do I even start and where do I even begin? Can you walk us through that, please?
I think there were two main areas that I leveraged. One was my past experience. I had past experience working in finance industries and technology. So even though quality of data was not there, it was very poor, I understood and I knew from day one when I actually joined Ebury that as a fintech, there were two main categories of spend I needed to focus on. One was technology in the broader sense of work, technology, IT, SaaS. Technology, IT, SaaS, and cloud, sorry, and facilities, which in Ebury is called Global Business Services. It's a company that is growing and expanding geographically, so you can imagine that is a large spend.
Yep.
So from day one, I focused on those two, even though I didn't have all the data I needed to do the more analytical type of work that I like to do as a consultant. but I focus on that, identify key stakeholders. I had a great support from my managers to know who I needed to talk to. And I think I spent my first month or 2 months just handshaking, introducing myself to everyone and then not having a plan in place because I didn't have it. I needed to first understand how we operate, what are our pain points, what are our concerns. So year one, I particularly focused, again, IT tech spend, which is obviously the main one at Ebury as a fintech. So I ended up working pretty much with all the heads of each of those subdivisions, product, technology, IT, risk as well. And so that was prime number one. It was like me bringing that past experience and say, even though I might have no data, these are the guys I need to focus on and be talking to them. Some of them are remote. I couldn't have them for a coffee, yeah. But I would be having pretty much like everyone was like, how it comes that you just arrive here, you now know everyone and you spend most of your time in calls, because I needed to understand that. I know, and I had some internal pressure, obviously, because the key deliverable was the policy and the process. So in month two, they asked me where the policy is. Like, it's not there yet, but I cannot develop a policy if I don't understand how we operate and what we need. So I had a little bit of internal pushback there, but I started by developing a procurement strategy. Again, it was not a procurement policy. It was a procurement strategy to define how do I envision procurement? And like I said, having that holistic approach. Like, yes, I'm going to be involved in negotiations and sourcing, but I'm going to work in processes. I'm going to work with improving the quality of the data that we have and we capture in our finance system. You mentioned about automations that I'm sure we're going to get down there. And there is still a lot to do. But my priority now is integrations, because we have multiple systems that they don't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So I developed that strategy after 2 months based on the conversations I have. And then from there, I started to work in that procurement policy. I developed a fairly standard process, not complex, but just to bring some structure. And from day one, when I put that document in place, I say, this is a live document. Don't expect it to be the procurement policy that is gonna, it has come to stay. It's gonna evolve as we evolve and mature in the procurement function and as a business as well. That, those were the two big ones. I still think it's overwhelming, but once you're there, you just go ahead.
And you know, as you were talking, this sounds almost like a discovery process when you come in into a company as a consultant. And I bet that being a consultant for so many years really paid off in this particular role, because this is what you would do as a consultant, right?
For me, it was a dream job, believe it or not. I remember when I had, because how I left my previous company, I don't want to deep dive too much into this, but I took a sabbatical. I was working in consulting for over 10 years, and I was kind of tired. Consulting can be hard. I was kind of burned out, and I was, my previous company, which obviously I love, I was like, I need a break. I'm taking a sabbatical. And I was in the midst of my sabbatical, and an old friend reached out to me, say, hey, I know you are in Malaga, well, in Granada, my hometown. There is an offer nearby that you might want to have a look. Because as a consultant, this is the dream job. It's like, it's the opportunity to create something from scratch and where you will be applying everything that you have learned. And it's challenging too, because I tend to say as a consultant, I spend all my years telling others what to do and how to do it. And now it's me telling myself what to do and how to do it. So it's like now my true test is, it has come to reality. So when I call my former company to say, look, this sabbatical is turning into this opportunity, and I think I had to take this. And they were absolutely, you had to do it. Like as a consultant, it's the opportunity, is the project that you want.
And how is this, being a full-time employee doing this, different for you versus being a contractor? How does that look like?
Well, I was never a contractor. The company I used to work is a consulting firm, Infosys Portland. So I was a full-time employee. But yes, I was working in a project-by-project basis. Yeah. Obviously, contracts will come and I will be allocated to one project or another one. So answering your question with that angle is completely different. But it's still, no, it's not that different. Sorry, I'm going to correct myself. It's not that different. It's still a project.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's just a very, very long project.
Exactly. It's a long project where you start with one, you focus in one area. Like I mentioned earlier, from a sourcing standpoint and category-wise, I focus in technology. What, now that I feel, and thanks to Vertis as well, now I feel I have that one under control. Now I'm in GBS, so facilities. But I'm also now working with HR. Again, the word is spreading, so it's like, and so much to do. It's not just like having all those categories under control and bring them under a specific process where now everyone is like, oh, the contract is expiring. We need to go through this renewal process. It's projects such as, let's integrate the different systems. So from a technology standpoint, I'm working in areas where I'm working with the departments I mentioned earlier, making sure that our system connect. Cleansing data to make sure that the same supplier name is the same across all the different systems and that they can connect. So there are multiple projects. The overwhelming part is to prioritize. Okay, you will always know how to prioritize. Again, 80-20 is one of those rules and things like that, like the two categories I mentioned, but you want to do everything. That's the overwhelming part. But it's similar to that consulting experience, past experience, because there are a lot of mini projects to implement, as you were pointed out.
And yeah, and as you were mentioning data cleansing, you know, speaking from the finance side, I am sure that the finance people absolutely love you.
We have excellent relationship, to be honest. Yeah.
So speaking of that, how is your working relationship with finance? How does that work? Like, do you guys get together when there is a specific renewal that needs to happen, or they tell you we have this much in the budget? Like, how does that work?
Well, because of the process we've implemented, the renewals don't always come from finance. They come from the different business departments. So because I've been socializing the process that much, they already know the process, and they already know to engage procurements and renewals are led by the business, and others are led by procurement and supporting. We determine that based on the procurement policy and the different quadrants we establish in terms of the scope of the services, so on and so forth. So that's the first one. Specifically with finance, I'm working a lot in more in a process side rather than the renewals. Renewals are more with the business. With finance, I'm working a lot in implementing the PO process, reducing the spend going under credit cards, which we have done a massive work there.
Yeah,
I can assure you that has been reduced significantly. So purchase order, supplier onboarding. Okay. Before, everything was sitting with finance, and they were following a kind of archaic process that has been a little bit uplift and more streamlined. But we're also looking into even improving that experience further. We're looking into solutions that help us with that onboarding process. So with finance directly, reducing credit card spend, purchase order processes, supplier onboarding. Those are the main three areas I'm working with them. Obviously, providing support when it comes to invoice reconciliations and some challenges, because they might not be really across how a contract works, or they don't have the right contact within an a vendor. Mm-hmm. So they tend to engage procurement now more even than the business departments to look into some of those ones, or helping like with some supplier requests they have, like, oh, we're processing 100 invoices a month with this vendor. How we can streamline this? Can we consolidate or no? Are they under multiple contracts or no? So finance comes to me, to procurement, for that type of support.
In terms of automation, are there any opportunities that you have found to automate this as well?
Yes, but I haven't implemented that yet. So for instance, it's one of the priority focus we have now, the purchase order process. Automations, we're looking to integrate systems so that we can automate, for instance, I don't want to get too technical, right? But you create a purchase order, the purchase order is released, services are received, you good receipt, right? Your good receipt process, you acknowledge the receipt of the services. Some of those ones can be automated. If we integrate, particularly when we're talking about the three-way match and the products, for instance, let's say laptops, because we have an asset registry. So I'm looking to integrate that asset registry. So when that asset is registered in that system, the good receipt node can be automated. They were in processing pretty much all the invoices manually, bringing them at the PO, the automating that invoice reconciliation process as well. The other one I mentioned, the supplier onboarding, is a little bit old school, I would say, like sending a form where you need to complete some information. So yeah. We're looking into solutions that work with a link. You send a link to the vendor, they enter the information, you just validate as much as you can automate it. We need to also bear in mind that this is finance sector. We are a fintech and we are highly regulated. So there are a lot of internal processes to ensure compliance and anti-money laundering actions to make sure that we, you know, dealing with the right vendors and we're not involved in any fraudulent activities. So that's why it's a bit more challenging automating some of those specific areas. But there are products that are getting developed there. The challenge that I find is the geographical scope. So, for instance, when it comes to supplier onboarding, it's critical to do the bank details validation, right? Like we are paying to the right organization and not someone else. So the solutions that I found are very geographical, even country driven. So we have some of them that they do the ID verification very well for UK or for France, but not for whole Europe, or not Europe and US or America, right? So those are some of the challenges as well. The industry needs to keep up with our requirements.
And are you using different tools for all of this? Or are you trying to integrate everything as much as possible into one tool at all?
My preferred approach is consolidation. It's not always possible. Some of the reasons that I mentioned just now is that sometimes there are no solutions that help you consolidate everything. Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes there are strong regulatory requirements that are country-driven. So even if you try to consolidate, it's quite challenging. But my initial focus has been understand the solutions we have in play and how we can connect them. And then from there, I will take the next step. So for instance, I'm working in the integration actually since a year ago, of our TPRM process system, our contract life cycle tool that is owned by legal, and then our financial ERP. So I'm working in getting them connected. I mentioned the asset management one that is more like downstream as well.
Yep.
My next step will be sort of build a layer app that helps you go through the entire process end to end. Know that you now need to connect to one system, submit a business case for the one for TPRM, connect to the legal system to upload the contract, connect to finance to submit the invoice, right? I like the next level up will be once we have that connected, create a single point of entry where you enter into your procurement journey without needing to jump from one system to another one.
Yeah, and that's always the ideal version. You know, we want to get there, but you know, there are steps. And I gotta ask, you have mentioned that Vertiz has been a part of your journey into streamlining and automating and doing all of this. How has Vertiz helped you do the procurement better?
For me, and this is my consultant background, okay, it all comes down to data. And this was my first requirement when I had my first meeting with Vertiz. It's like, I know you are great in, you know, negotiating, managing renewals and all that type of work, which is awesome. And I need it because when I started a year ago, it was just me.
Yep.
Okay. So me managing all the renewals, that's not doable. Communicating or engaging to all the different stakeholders to manage the renewal is not doable. Obviously, Vertiz has been great to, you know, help me manage and feel that now I have that spend under control. A year later, I'm comfortable saying my IT tech cloud spend is under control, and we're not no longer waiting for our business owner to come to us saying there is a renewal. We are coming to them and say, hey, there is a renewal coming up. So obviously that support I receive day to day with Vertiz is incredible. As one person, honestly, I wish I could do everything, but I can't. Even now the procurement team is growing and I have resources with me, still there are a lot of suppliers and a lot of work to do and more areas that I need to focus. So that has been obviously the most evident support. But for me, the key one, as I mentioned to Vertiz on day one, is the data. I want to rely in a platform that I can connect and see everything that I have. Trust and rely on that contract is owned by this person. And these are the start and end date. These are the notice period. And this is the total contract value. I do have now that information in one side. I know it sounds very obvious, but I didn't have that a year ago. So having Vertiz support when I was like, there you go, all the data, please go through it and build this baseline for me because I have no capacity to do it, even though for me it's a priority number one, has been a massive help.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny, as you were talking about that you didn't have like a one source of truth of all this data, that brought back memories for me, like years and years and years, like many moons ago, I used to take care of the IT spend that we had in one particular company, and it was $80 million that... It was line by line on a spreadsheet. We had the contract value, the renewal dates, the start, the end dates. And I kid you not, it was a total of about 2,500 lines that finance had to track. And it was painful and it was messy and it was just terrible. I would have done like anything to have a system like that in the past.
Even for me, when I joined, even that Excel sheet, that it wasn't even there. But I skipped that part. Now we got Vertiz and I didn't even have to build that spreadsheet. So yeah, and it's the visuals, they help so much. Not only for you to read and to, in one glimpse, to know where you are, what your priorities are in the next quarter or 6 months, but also to communicate that with some of those senior stakeholders where now I'm coming to them and say, hey, this is all that we're going to work on in the next 6 months. And it's all beautifully captured there. It's not an spreadsheet, your pivot tables working around. So yeah, it has been great.
So who has access to that system? Is it, I would think the finance has access, also the owners of the contract? Who has access to all of the system?
I'm taking this very slow, and I know where this is. Like, Angela, we need to speed up here a little bit more. The reason why I don't have all the contract owners there yet is because procurement was new. So I wanted to first let them understand that procurement is here, mm-hmm. what our process is, and then slow. Once they involve in the process and they understand, they are the ones having the access. So, for instance, some specific areas that have already worked with me and with Verti, and I've introduced Vertis, and they had the experience of the renewals, and they're very happy with them. They now that have all that full access. So I'm granting that access slowly. But that's my way to manage it and build, because for me, as you might have noticed, because it was one of my key first steps that I did, is all about communication and building trust and relationships. So I'm taking that little step, like going hand in hand. Now with many contracts and some stakeholders, it's like, Vertis is going to reach out. They're going to do everything. And they're perfectly fine. But obviously, those stakeholders, again, they are familiar with procurement. They know what we do. They trust us. And they know Vertis is just the partner we're working with. So, yeah.
You know, as we were talking about all the changes that you've implemented, there's a lot of change that has happened since you started. How have you managed to communicate that? Because that can be a challenge by itself. Like, how do you do these rollouts? Do you have a meeting with all the stakeholders? Hey, this is coming down the pipeline. There's going to be some changes, just so you know. How do you manage the change management of it all?
On day one, I was talking to everyone. I just want everyone to know that procurement was here. And actually, I'm known as Angela, a.k.a. Procurement. So that was the thing. Now, obviously, the key is identify your key stakeholders, right? Like a product, the head of product, head of technology, and then understanding how to communicate from top to bottom. So I actually had that high level, like, senior level focus, and I had a strong support from my management, from the CFO, FP&A, and the head of global accounting. We also have internal communication channels, posting things here and there in our internal systems, and I've been delivering trainings, and we have some maybe annual CFO retreat and the senior leadership retreat. Then I do those presentations as well, where I have the opportunity to talk about what procurement is, but now a year and a half later, to also share the outcomes that we have delivered, successful stories, which has been many, I would say. So that has helped me a lot.
That's awesome. Are you able to share one of the success stories with us that we haven't talked about yet?
This was hard. it was hard because it's one of the, not giving specific names, but everyone knows the names here, in cloud services, right? There are two major service providers. We work with both, okay? With one, there was already a contract in place, but with the other one, it was pay-as-you-go. There was no contract. There was like, we pay as we go. We have a reseller that invoices for the consumption, and that's it.
Yep.
So for me, the success story was like, I'm gonna put a contract here, but not just a contract, right? Like, I'm gonna build a strong relationship with this vendor, and it's one of the largest. So how we also picture? How do I picture Ivory as? You need to consider as well. You need to understand that even though we are small, because we are a fintech, and maybe we are not a bank, our spend is not like a bank, how are we going to be taken seriously? in order to tap into not only cost savings or discounts, but in building a strong supplier relationship where value is in having regular meetings, catch-ups, where we hear from them what things can be done differently, where they take us into account when there are a new product launch, or they want us to be there testing those products. So I'm already giving you the outcomes of that successful story. It took me July. I started in July just to trying to identify who I needed to talk to within that vendor. It was very challenging. to get their attention and their time was also very hard because, again, we were a small spend.
Yeah.
And I started that in July last year, and we ended up signing the whole of eBoody contract in December. It's a success story in the sense of all the work that was behind those 6 months. But what it has come after those 6 months and since we signed the contract, for me, that's the best thing ever. I mean, everyone knows about that contract. Everyone wants to use that vendor because they are using us. Like they contact us to learn about new products, to help us improve our processes, to learn better about things. We have monthly catch-up, quarterly reviews. Everything that is required, like from a proper governance standpoint, is there. And we actually have a name within the vendor now. For me, that's a success story. Yeah.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that one.
That one. And honestly, they also talk very highly about the eBoody too. And I've seen that in many different forums. So it's my, you know, a good success story, even though I think there are many more.
I do got to ask, if someone is in the same position, if there's a company in the same position, they're small and they're dealing with a big vendor, is there a tip that you can give them to be taken more seriously by the vendor? Something that was particularly helpful to you as you were negotiating?
Yeah, I realized I'm a good seller.
Nice.
I could work in sales. It's like, what makes you unique as an organization? So my tip for anyone in that position, something makes your organization unique. There is some specific, now that everything is so diversified and there is such a degree of specialization in some different areas, what is your value in any industry, and they put it up there and talk about it and say, yeah, I'm small, but I'm important. And I'm here to, you know, to do things. And that has been for me the thing. And I never say we're going to spend more than what we're going to spend. I'm very realistic with those things. But I was really proud of who we are as an organization and that we needed, you know, a seat in a table.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that tip, Angela. That's super, super helpful for our listeners. And, you know, the last question that I have is that every single guest gets asked on this podcast, what is your number one tip for leaders when it comes to tackling rising SaaS and cloud cost?
SaaS and cloud cost, they are challenging. From a procurement standpoint, again, traditional sourcing negotiation, we think it's all about squeezing unit cost and savings, but it's value. Like, it's the switch from that cost-driven approach to value. Like the contract I just mentioned and the vendor I mentioned, it's not just the discounts we got, right? It's the additional value we're getting out of that contract. So that's, for me, the key thing is like the focus from cost to value. That's one. And then from a SaaS standpoint is optimization of your services. Now, I also noticed that I have to do a lot of work in challenging why a new SaaS vendor is required. And do we really need that one? Or do we already have someone already we're working on that we can deliver that work? It's hard to find that balance because of the degree of specialization that some are bringing, because sometimes the industry are not developed there yet. So it has to be very, like, doesn't have the coverage, I would say, that or scope that I wish they had. But keeping that balance is challenge and it's a key focus for me. And again, you cannot keep delivering savings just by squeezing on price. It's building relationship with those, particularly in our case with cloud vendors. With SaaS, it's about finding that balance on the vendors and the value of each vendor and keeping the right number consolidation opportunities there. And particularly with cloud, is relationship driven, supplier relationship management, building strong relationships with your partners and with your vendor and working with them, not just signing a contract and expect that the services are going to be delivered.
Yeah, that's a great tip, Angela. And Thank you so much for being in the podcast. I have learned a lot. I'm sure our audience has learned a lot. And you've been so open and honest about your journey. I really thank you for that.
Thank you for having me again. It's a pleasure. And again, it's been a pleasure working with Vertice over the last year.